final hour. Darren Donica Chase on this Wednesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Let's talk to the big fella, Hal Gill, a.k.a. Skillsy. So we switch gears, talk a little pucks, a little ice, a little nets, sticks. Let's talk a little hockey. Hal, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. His son came out for me. I'm pretty happy about it.
Especially with some developments in Boston last night. Did that put a little extra pep in your step there, Hal?
You know what? I'm not a huge MLB fan until the Red Sox play the Yankees, and then I become the biggest diehard Red Sox fan you'll ever hear of, and I was wicked excited about that one last night.
Oh, yes. Got a little wicked in there.
Wicked awesome.
I'm going to start in a weird place with you, just because we were talking about it.
Oh, Lord.
That kind of scares me.
I know.
Can we not go to a weird place?
You need a beer first.
You know, we know your thought. You played in the league for over 16 seasons, over 1,000 games. You're an old-school guy. You've got that old-school mentality. That's what we love about you, right? Hard-nosed grit. Bring your hard hat to do it. But we were talking about analytics, and there's an article that came out on ESPN.com, and they sent out a survey, a 13-question survey to every team in the NFL, and it was, you know, anonymous, where you could speak freely and just basically rank the teams and answer the questions and speak on who's good in the league with analytics and who's not good. Titans were dead last. In fact, in this article it says they just hired their first staffer that has anything to do with analytics in August. So the Titans were dead last in the league. Carolina, who the Predators just played last night, we know they're very advanced in analytics. Predators have done a good job of that. You started off in this after your playing career in Florida. They've also used analytics as well. What is the right balance? Where are you, Skillsy, on how much do you crunch the numbers and use the stats, and how much, you know, do you use the eyeball test and the gut feeling and, you know, what you see and what you know? How would you answer that?
It's a tough question to answer because there's so many different levels of analytics that are used, because, you know, there's the GM that's got to sign a player based on what? Based on whether he likes the guy, based on his analytics. There's a coach that's got to implement a system and use a system that would reflect what his team analytics looks like. So he's looking at, then there's the player that's got to try to boost his analytics. How do you make your analytics better so you're a more attractive player? So there's so many levels of that. I have a bitter taste in my mouth because I was in Montreal and they told me, hey, they're thinking of moving you. They don't really like your game. And I said, what am I doing wrong? And the assistant coach told me that my numbers were down. And I said, what numbers? And he said, I don't really know. And I said, well, how do I get my numbers? How do I get my analytics to be better? And they said, this is a direct quote, I really don't understand the numbers. They send me a sheet in the morning, and it has all these numbers on it. I don't really understand what they mean, but your numbers were not good. So how do you handle that as a player? How do you handle that as a coach? How do you make your numbers better? So I do think there's a place you can research and deep dive into each one of your players and see who plays well in this situation, who plays well in that situation, the combinations of this guy has good numbers when he's playing with this guy. And if that is his centerman, he's going to give you good numbers. And so as a coach, I think you have to exhaust everything, every amount of information you can get. But you certainly can't make game time decisions off analytics, because it's a human game. It's a game of human errors. And some guys are playing well and other guys are having a bad night. And so you kind of have to go off of what your gut is in that situation. So I think there's a healthy balance, but it certainly gets foggy when you try to coach the actual player based on analytics. It just doesn't add up. So I'm not sure if I answered your question or just made that a lot more foggy, because I'm confused now. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore.
Well, I think you're making a great point.
Is analytical.
Taking it from the room where the people are compiling these numbers and marrying it to how you're coaching your players and how you, the player, is absorbing this and using this is everything. And I do think they've come a long way since you were playing, yeah. Hal. Not to say you're that removed from the game, because you're not.
I get it.
You know what I mean? Like, I do think it's evolved since that time when you were in Montreal. So we're talking 10 years ago, right?
That would have been my comment, Willie. Like, I hope in today's game, conversation between player and coach has gotten better than just,
well, if you,
I don't know.
Because honestly,
at
if you can't do that,
look good.
If you can't do that, the numbers are really useless.
Right. Right.
If you can't help the player, if you're out there and you don't understand what they're doing and the coach doesn't understand, then it really is of no use.
Yeah.
And so that's where there's been a lot of work that has to be done. How do we translate this? How do we get this to where it actually helps our guys?
So let's talk about that then, Skillsy, with you.
You know what the bottom line is? You know what? Here's the difference. And this is where, you know, a guy behind a computer who can punch numbers in and get results out and give you numbers back, that guy has never gone into a corner against the guy that he fought two nights ago and that punched him in the face and knocked him out. And so if you get punched in the face and knocked out and the guy is coming in on the forecheck, you're going to play that very different than you would against a guy that you just punched and knocked out three games ago. You know what I mean? That is not going to be an analytical number. And so you have to make room for that human element. And if you're talking to a guy who's a playmaker and he makes plays and feels really confident playing against this line, that's not going to show up on analytics. And I know I've had this fight with many people, and there's a good balance between using the analytics, but you also have to let it go and let the players play the game.
Isn't that a little bit of what Rocco Grimaldi's probably dealing with? The analytics, the Vance stats, have said, you know, with the puck, offensively, scoring punch, all that stuff is good. Gets the check marks. It's the other stuff right away from the puck that's going against him. And I'm sure those are the conversations that the coaches have had with Rocco, is when he doesn't have the puck. And to your point, Hal, you're probably hoping, and at least I'm hoping too, that conversations like that, okay, if you're going to then show the player, these are what the numbers are telling us, okay, then what's the plan? Like, how do we make that better? How do we get you to make those numbers look better in your favor? And that's where you hope in 2021, if you're going to show a player some numbers and say, hey, these are what the analytics are saying about you in a certain category, and then here's how we're going to attack that to help you and help us.
Right. Well, that's the hard part. And we look at going into training camp, you look at Igor Afanasyev, I love his game, and he's got a heck of a shot. He had three goals in camp, and he looked fantastic. I'm sure Coach Hines he can pick apart his defensive game over and over again. You know, he's looking at video. He's breaking it down. Philip Tomasino scored a huge goal last night. That's great that he scored a goal, but what about the rest of his game? There's so much more than just your numbers and what you do. It's about, you look at Tanner Jeannot. I don't care what his numbers are. If he goes out and gets a big hit in the first, that's a game changer, right? You know, that's a big thing for me when he comes back to the bench and every guy on the bench feels about 2 inches taller because he just went out and dummied someone. If Yakov Trenin knocks out Zdeno Chara, everyone on that bench, their analytics just went through the roof because you're invincible at that point. And so there's a lot more to the game than those numbers. And with Rocco's situation, he's got to worry about his complete game, not just his offensive numbers, not just his defensive numbers. It's a total composition of everything he's done.
If we were comparing two great stories last year, Tanner Jeannot and Matthew Olivier, to this point, speaking of this, don't you think right now Tanner Jeannot has the edge because of kind of what we're talking about? He's become more the complete player. Like, they both burst onto the scene, Skillsy, with, you know, their hits and their grit and, you know, that sandpaper mentality, stuff that we were talking about and, you know, what they were doing, the energy and all that stuff is great. But Tanner Jeannot has added some more extra elements to it. He's become a little bit more of a complete player. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, one of Willie's favorite stats that I always bring up is the get it done activity.
That's a skillsy analytic right there.
Both of those guys rank high on the get it done activity, where they get it done. The bottom line is they affect the game. They go out and they're physical and they're hard. I do think, from what I've seen, Tanner Jeannot has that offensive upside. And so it's going to be interesting. You know, you can take the beast line and who fits in on that beast line. You have four guys that really could be part of the beast line with Sissons, with Trennan, Olivier, and Jeannot. I wouldn't be surprised to see Jeannot move up in that lineup and play more of a skilled role where he can use that physicality to set up and create space or maybe a Gronlund or a Cunning. You know, you give Cody Glass a little more space when he's got a guy like Tanner Jeannot out there. Maybe Tomasino plays with him, and a young kid coming into the league has a little more room to move. And when he has it's kind of like having a nice warm blanket on your wing, right? It feels nice and secure, and you feel safe when you're out there playing with a guy like Olivier, like Jeannot, and maybe Jeannot moves up into that position.
Talking to Hal Gill. And we're talking Predators. Last night, for people that maybe didn't see it, the Predators did go to Raleigh, North Carolina, and win in overtime on Philip Tomasino's game winner. And it was both teams used more of, closer to, what you're going to see on opening night. So it was interesting, and of course ironic, they were not able to win in Carolina last year. But how? So let's put that in perspective is, With the fact that you saw more of NHL rosters last night, where do you weigh the overall performance in terms of being able to go there and get a win?
It was tough. It was a man's game last night. I was expecting, you know, when you put in a bunch of veterans in the regular season, usually you get, you know, I'll take the shot and I'll loop away. You know, I'm not going to really drive the net too hard. It was a really good test. And I think Pete Weber called it, it's not just a game, it was a contest. And there was a lot of battles going to the net. And that's the way Carolina plays, we know that. I was expecting it to be a little bit softer in the preseason, but I think the history between those two teams kind of amped it up, and it became a pretty good battle. So that being said, there was so little space to move that it wasn't a really great showcase for the offensive side, but the defensive side was fun to watch. You know, you have guys like Fabro, Carrier, Jeremy Davies going out battling for a spot and trying to prove their worth. And they had guys like Aho and Svechnikov barreling down on them. They weren't shying away. So it was a good test. It'll be interesting to get John Hines' take on it after he watches film, watches all the little plays. Can guys get the puck in tight areas and move them? Because there was a lot of turnovers because of the tight checking. So, you know, I'd love to sit down and be a fly on the wall in the coach's room, just letting them bounce it around. Like, who deserves to be here? Afanasyev has been good. Tomasino gets the game winner. Like, do both of those guys get a shot at playing on opening night, or is it just one of them? Mm. There's just so many decisions that they have to make. And I thought guys played well, but until you break down the video with a coach and really talk about what their game plan was and how they executed it, you don't really know.
All right, let's hit you with another one that falls into your – this is more maybe a little bit intangible – and maybe not reflective in the analytics, but also what impact this has on the game. It's very clear that over the last 2 years, there's been a conscious effort to get bigger, tougher. You go back to that Winter Classic, which we were all at, down on the ice. They got physically manhandled by the Stars. They got beat up. Ryan Ellis got the concussion. Chase got beat up by Hal. But I think if you take a look, there's been an effort. The roster is much bigger now. You talk about the beasts, you know, the Oliviers, the Jeannots. Cody Glass is 6'3". Phil Myers, they bring in at 6'5". Even Igor Afanasyev is 6'4". The average size of the players that they're using, and of course out the door go Ryan Ellis, go Victor Arvidsson. So collectively they're a bigger, tougher team. What impact are you seeing there? How on the ice?
And I'd argue faster. And
so yeah, without obviously you can't have a bunch of plodding guys who can't skate. So this is hopefully without sacrificing a lot of speed.
Yeah, they can move, and that's the impressive part. Being down on the ice when we did that live stream, you could see these guys, they're fast. And you know, when we're up in our perch up above Bridgestone, you go, wow, these guys are good players. But when you're down there, you see the size of them, then you see the speed, and it all comes together. So it was kind of a slap in the face that how big these guys are for me. But you know what? I feel like the NHL is such a copycat league. And you talk about, you know, Pittsburgh Penguins had a good run where they were fast. They had smaller guys, and they would buzz around the ice. And they had their big dogs, of course, and Crosby and Malkin. But a lot of it was just team speed. And we played in that whatever division that was that made up division last year where you had big teams. You had Florida was big. Carolina, of course, was big. Tampa played a big game. And you go back to Dallas. Dallas has a big physical team. And so it's kind of a copycat league. You play against those teams long enough, you realize we got to get bigger. And so I think that's just a natural adjustment. I think the NHL is tracking towards that way where you need that size. And it went away from it for a while. And, you know, that's why I couldn't play. I couldn't keep up with all the little team speed. And now I wish I was coming back now because I feel like everyone's getting bigger. The only problem is they're still as fast. And that's the impressive part. And so I think the Preds are on track with what the NHL is moving to. And I think that reset from David Poile was a competitive rebuild to catch up to that size and that speed.
Hal Gill is with us, Predators radio analyst, does some work on the TV side as well. This team right now has 9 defensemen. They have carried 8 in the past, could go to 7, depends on however you want to look at the rest of the roster. But Jeremy Davies has been somebody to pay attention to in training camp. Do you think that he's done enough? He got a cup of coffee here last year due to injuries, but has he done enough to make this roster for opening night? What have you seen?
I know. I feel for him. I think he's got a great offensive side, upside, and he can move the puck. He can skate. He's not a big guy, so he's got to defend well and be positionally good, and I think he is that. It might be just a numbers game. You know, I don't know if he slides into a spot right now. Do you want to have a younger guy like that in a 7 or 8 spot? Or do you want to let him go and continue to develop his game in the minors? That's where I think he is at. But he certainly showed he can compete. Offensively, he's awesome. Defensively, he was good and solid. He was blocking shots last night. He took one right in the ribs, and it was a gutsy effort. So he was leaving it out on the ice, which is exactly what you want to see out of him. I just don't know if the numbers will keep them around.
Typically, you've seen, whether it was Peter Laviolette or now John Hines, with defensemen, they like the right-left combination and keeping it that way. From a defenseman's point of view, if you're playing on your offhand, just how difficult is that, even if you're trying to get the best two players matched up together?
Yeah, it's different for every guy. You know, like I was on the left side, and there's no way I was going to the strong side. The right side of the ice was not for me. I had a harder time pivoting that way. You know, so I stayed on the left. My first partner was Ray Bourque, who's a left-hand shot, and he wanted to play on the right all the time, which is perfect for me because I got to play with him. And so it depends on the player. I think some guys can transition and flip back and forth. Other guys will fall in, and it doesn't necessarily worry about left or right until you get to the power play. That's when the power play, you need a right-hand one-timer or you need a left-hand one-timer. That changes the story. So, I think there's a lot that can be worked out, but it comes down to an individual preference.
Last tune-up before the regular season, Saturday afternoon, and then it's on.
It's going to be exciting. Hey, and I got to tell you, I just went through Bridgestone Arena. They had a tasting. It was fantastic. Nick Barnowski set it all up, and it was fantastic. We got to try food. We took a tour of the arena.
Yeah.
I was there with Lindsey Rowley, just, you know, devouring food left and right. And now we're getting a tour of Pete and Terry's, which is, I don't know if anyone's been to Pete and Terry's, but it's fantastic down here.
Yeah, we've been there a time.
It's a good spot.
Yeah,
it's a good spot.
There a time or two. Yeah.
Hey, the new menu is fire at Bridgestone. So,
oh, nice.
I hope you guys enjoy it.
What was there any example, Hal, that you sampled today that you're like, wow, this is good stuff? I know that traditionally this, and we missed out on this because, of course, our time of the show. Otherwise, the three of us would have enjoyed partaking in this.
And have done in the past.
So yes. any items that you'd like to showcase today that you have consumed?
There was a hickory barbecue cheeseburger that was deadly.
Oh, man.
There was I think Sean Henry posted a picture of a 2-foot-long slap shot sub or whatever it was called. It was fantastic. Tomatoes and pickles to top it off. A lot of good food. A huge fan of the Bearded Iris new bar that's in there with Disc and Cider. That's a bright spot, and I may go visit it later and just keep going to visit it. But there's a lot of good spots in here, so everyone's got to come out Saturday night. It's going to be awesome.
I will just say this, Hal. I'm sure you've seen it by now, but the quote retweet by Nash with to Lindsay's additional tweet, I will just tell you right now, I'll admit it openly on radio, I peed right down my leg. I was laughing so hard, I peed right down my leg. I have no problems admitting that. Yeah,
they have no comment. Okay, you know, it's probably a smart move.
I was worried. I was worried about Crispy on that one.
And by the way, when have you ever said that, right? Yes. Ever in your life, you were worried about Crispy.
Yes, because we witnessed this live. We witnessed it when it took place. We were in the area when this went down.
Oh, my gosh. I could not. I responded to that tweet from Nash, and I had a GIF that was a guy saying, he's laughing so hard, he's like, I can't breathe. I mean, it was just tremendous.
Well, on so many levels, Terry Crisper, he's an old man. He shouldn't have to be exposed to that on a physical and emotional level. And then the follow-up from Nash, God bless Nash. He's a good kitty, but, maybe stay in his lane a little bit. Maybe push it too far.
Are you saying too soon? Is that what you're saying?
Maybe too soon. Maybe too soon.
Just maybe.
Skillsy, love it. Appreciate it. Thanks for doing this. We'll see you Saturday.
Bye, Skillsy.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys. Cheers.
Hal Gill, signature cheers on the way out.
Oh, that's so good.
That was – I mean, if you haven't seen it
I sent it to you guys.
You have missed out.
Had you seen it before I sent it to the group text, or was that when you
– I don't know. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at the timeline of when I responded to it. And when you sent it to us, I don't know, Chase.
Because I saw that, and I was taking a sip of a drink.
When
that drink went everywhere.
It? When did you send it?
It was last night. I mean, it was during the baseball game, during the hockey game that I sent it. But
I don't remember.
I spit my drink out. I was laughing so hard.
I had to sit there and stare at it for like 5 minutes before I could stop laughing. I couldn't do anything until I stopped laughing, and I just
I sent it at 8:50 p.m. That's when I sent it.
Do they call that the Urban Meyer? I mean, I peed down my leg. I peed down my leg. I was laughing so hard.
Hey, Nash has some zingers, okay?
That's why he's going to go into the Hall of Fame.
I voted for him.
I voted for him. That is going on right now. You can continue to vote for the Mascot Hall of Fame if you
I need to do this. I need to get on this.
Jump in.
Let's
gotta get
come
in
back
there.
And discuss this team on the other side as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase. But first, Chase, you've got a word about BetMGM.
Yes, I do. You want to get your payout before the game's out? This is how you do that. Yeah, I know, right? Place a money line wager on any Thursday night football game, and if your team is up by 10 or more at halftime, you will win. That's a full payout for only half the game, no matter what happens the rest of the way. Simply go to your BetMGM account, opt in each week to the Thursday night halftime payout promotion. Want to continue wagering in the third quarter? Keep it rolling with BetMGM's extensive live betting options. If you need to hit the sack early, use your winnings to place a one-game parlay on Sunday and go for gridiron glory. If you're new to BetMGM, download the app today and see how you can turn halftime into cash time. Make a money line bet on Thursday night, and if your team is up by 10 or more, you'll win at the half. It's only at BetMGM. Opt-in required. You must be 21 years or older, must be in Tennessee. Visit BetMGM.com for a full list of terms and conditions. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.